This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. October is National Bullying Prevention Month, and IU Kokomo is commemorating it with a series of talks on bullying, and their guest of honor on October 5th is spoken word poet Shane Koizan, and he joins us now. Shane, thank you for your time.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
Shane, you're most famous for a poem you wrote called To This Day. It's been viewed on YouTube over 23 million times. Can you first start by talking about how you came to write this poem?
Oh, yeah. Well, for me, it was just kind of, it came about, you know, writers write what they know about. And I remember going into schools, and as a poet, I got asked to go in schools, and I didn't think that it would trigger me as much going back into schools and walking down the hallways, but, you know, you hear the bang of the lockers and stuff, and it just kind of triggers you. And that's kind of how I came to want to write the piece. But I did, when I was writing about the subject, I didn't want to write about just my experience, because it didn't happen to just me. There was so much going on in the periphery around me, walking around the halls of schools. You knew, you could point to the other kids who were going through it too, who were getting it bad. So I wanted something that included a lot of other people, and those were the examples that I could draw from.
It's clear from the poem, which made all of us cry here at All In, that bullying is something that deeply impacted your life, as it does so many people who are, so much so that you made it the main focus of your work. Do you remember when it all began when you were a child?
Yeah, like, I mean, being in class, like, it basically just came as, like, being singled out as being different. You know, once other kids can latch on to something that, like, I mean, sets you apart from all the others, it becomes easier for them to sort of, like, gang up on, you know, or jump onto the bandwagon of, you know, other coolness to support in, you know, picking somebody apart. And that's really kind of what happened to me.
I was bullied for different reasons. A lot of kids were, but some of us get it worse than others. How did you deal with it then, before you had the right, I guess, mental and emotional tools to do so?
I had family support. My grandmother worked at a receiving home, which was a home for abused children, runaways, people who had been sexually abused, children who had been sexually abused, things like that, children who had been bullied at home by family and parents. So she, like, I mean, she worked with that every day, and then she would come home and have to deal with me, and, you know, but she had those tools to help deal with it. I think, like, you really need connections with people. You need empathetic people, people who are going to listen to you, not tell you, this is what you're experiencing. It's like, I know what I'm going through. I need to talk about it with somebody. And so listening becomes and receiving becomes a very important part of that support system. And she was my support system. Also, I grew up in a time where bullying was quite different. You know, bullying ended at the end of the school day. 3 o'clock, you got to go home, and that was it. We live in a much different world now, where it's like, you know, the internet is a window that's constantly opened into a lot of kids' worlds, so they go home with it, you know, and it's never ending. Luckily, we live in a time now where there's different kinds of supports in place. Because growing up for me, it's like there were never any posters on the wall or support groups in the schools or even numbers you could call. We have all those resources now, and they're so important.
You gave a TED talk around the poem, and in it you explain, when I was 10, I was told my parents left because they didn't want me. When I was 11, I wanted to be left alone. When I was 12, I wanted to die. And when I was 13, I wanted to kill a kid. Do you think that, I don't know, is a typical progression among people at that age who were bullied day in and day out? And is your life's work sort of shining a light on that and preventing any exacerbation of that problem?
I think, yeah, like, I mean, when you shine a light on anything, you open up the conversation. Communication is always going to be key to any problem we have, whether that's, you know, our love lives or our romantic relationships or your work, your job, the relationships you have with your friends. Communication is always going to be key. And so that starts by opening up the conversation. And, you know, I think that, you know, To This Day helped do that. I hope it did.
I think it's easy for adults to not have sympathy for what look like typical childhood problems. Do you think that we underestimate the pain and struggles of children and
Absolutely.
Young teens? Yeah.
there comes a point where bullying becomes too cute of a word, and you need to start calling it for what it is.
I've thought the exact same thing.
It's okay. As an example, there's a girl I met, and she was telling her story about how she didn't have any friends in school. And one day, a group of kids decided, hey, why don't you come hang out with us? And she was so happy and so grateful. So she went with these kids out into the woods. And then the kids just left her there. And that doesn't sound so bad until she tells you that she's blind. And you realize that that then becomes reckless endangerment. Like, I mean, if she died out there, that would have been manslaughter. Like, I mean, at a certain point, bullying doesn't cut it, and you have to call things what they are. The mental effects are, they're clearly documented, the people who go through this kind of trauma. It doesn't just stay with you for the day. It stays with you for your life.
I want to come back to this idea of bullying being too cute a word. What would you prefer to call it? What would you prefer anyone call it?
Well, call it what it is. If somebody is like physically assaulting you, that is assault. I think the word bullying frames things in a way that people are, it's easily digestible and it's not that serious. People who have been bullied, their minds go to dangerous places. They internalize, whether that's thinking about suicide, whether that's thinking of violent thoughts or revenge fantasies or any of those things. You don't know what button you're pushing inside of somebody. You don't understand what trauma they've been through themselves already. And so when a bully finds something to latch onto and won't let go of, it exacerbates that wound, obviously, and opens it up to new kinds of infections.
You've also spoken about how you yourself became a bully in your teen years. What was it that led to that shift?
It was that just that straw that broke the camel's back sort of thing. I was living in Yellowknife, and the day my grandmother told me we were moving was one of the happiest days of my life. I thought, oh my God, this is so perfect. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to leave all this behind. This is going to be amazing. And so we moved, and we ended up in Penticton, British Columbia. And first day of school, it started happening again. And I was at a point where I was like, I can't let this be the rest of my life. And so, you know, got into a fight and became that thing that, you know, people wanted to keep doing to me just so I could be left alone. The option was better to be left alone, to let people be afraid of me rather than try and make friends.
So it was sort of your way of standing up for yourself. I guess, what would you say to someone who is looking to stand up for themselves in a healthier, more effective way?
Art was the best way for me. Write it down. Find your voice. Your voice is going to be one of the most powerful things you have. Your voice can stop a bully in their tracks. And I don't think a lot of people talk about that. I remember being bullied in school, and there was one of the questions that used to get asked a lot in Yellowknife was, do you want to die? Which is obviously a ridiculous question, because no. But I remember one time, being, you know, you get asked that question often enough, you start to turn it over in your head. And one day, sure enough, he asked the question, do you want to die? And I was just honest, and I said, sometime. And that really took him aback, and it really made him stop and think about what he was doing to me and what he was asking.
And speaking of art, visual art made its way into the video. Of course, it's a very sort of powerful enhancer. And you mentioned the animation earlier. How involved were you in that part of the production?
I was really lucky in that I got to work with a group called Giant Ant, and they wanted a voiceover for something that for a project that they were doing with the Dalai Lama, which I was happy to lend my support to. And the idea came in as kind of a trade. It's like, well, here, like, let me help you guys with this. And if you can help me figure out a game plan to do this project, that would be awesome. And so they were really great at just reaching out to a bunch of different animators saying, like, here's the project. Who wants to get involved? And so we reached all these different filmmakers and animators who were then, like, given just a snippet of the poem. And then we were able to stitch it all together. And I'm so grateful to everybody who worked on it.
The video's got over 23 million views. There are also over 70,000 comments, mostly from people who were moved to share their own experiences with bullying. What's some of the most poignant feedback you've gotten from the piece that you remember?
You get all kinds of messages. I don't want to lie and say that it's like it's all positive. A lot of it's negative too. The ones that stay with you are the ones that are the most severe. They're the ones that are, they come from kids that are on a ledge. And you do what you can to reach out and reach back and give them the numbers. And, you know, you do what you know to do. And sometimes it's not enough. Sometimes you reach out, you're reaching out into a void, and you never know what happened to those particular people. So that kind of stuff stays with me a lot. The parts that give me hope, the parts that give me joy, are when I get a letter from a kid who is like, hey, I was a bully, and thanks for telling me to, like, be a protector rather than a bully, because, like, now I've got these great friends in my life because I've been protecting them from other bullies. And I was like, that's the stuff that, like, puts a smile on my face and makes me feel like, oh, it's okay, we still got hope.
There are a lot of art forms out there. Do you think there's something special about poetry that allowed so many people to connect to this piece?
Poetry is malleable, and poetry is, you know, it's a direct representation of your voice. Whereas, like, painting and, you know, sculpture and music, they can all be a bit more abstract in terms of, like, this is your voice. But poetry is a direct sort of A to B way to tell someone what you think and what you feel. And in that way, it becomes very powerful and expressive.
When we talk about eradicating bullying, that can seem like an overwhelming, insurmountable task, knowing how pervasive it is inside and outside of schools, even online now. Where should we be focusing our efforts?
Identifying the kids who are isolated, because they're the ones who are the most vulnerable and the ones most susceptible to, you know, allowing their minds to create dangerous thinking patterns. When you're alone, when you have nobody to talk to, and you're in total isolation, it becomes, you know, you start listening to the voices inside your head, and it's just a dangerous place to be. And so I think identifying people who are isolated becomes a very important part of that.
Shane Koizan will be speaking at IU Kokomo on Saturday to commemorate National Bullying Prevention Month. Shane, thank you for your work, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much. I look forward to being there.
Up next, we'll expand the conversation on bullying, ways it's being looked at, and ways it's being handled by schools and mental health professionals. I'm Matt Pelser. Stay with us. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Before we get back to the topic on this, the third day of National Bullying Prevention Month, I want to encourage you to check out yesterday's show if you're wanting some lighter fare. We talked about the change of seasons in Indiana as we stare down autumn. We had a really fun show with the Brown County Convention and Visitors Bureau, as well as Brown County State Park interpretive naturalist Patrick Halter. You can check out the podcast for those fun conversations. You can find that and all past shows wherever you get your podcasts. Back now to the topic of bullying. Joining us via Skype to help us understand what it means and how it's dealt with in Indiana schools is Dean of the School of Education at IU Kokomo, Dr. Leah Nellis. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Matt. Thanks for having me with you.
On the phone is President and CEO of Mental Health America, Wabash Valley, Brandy Christensen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And in the studio is the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, Tammy Silverman. Hi, Tammy.
Hello.
And, of course, we welcome your questions and comments. How did you deal with bullying in school? Were you in school at a time when you could leave it at school and not take your digital life with you? If you have kids, what do you tell them about bullying? And how have you helped them deal with online bullying? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Tammy Silverman, I can't let go of what Shane Koizan said in the last segment about how the word itself, yes, bullying, is too cute a word. A lot's been done to raise awareness about bullying.
Yes.
But I think a lot of skeptics get hung up on the word. How can we get this message to those people?
Well, I think he was absolutely right. There is a point at which it is assault, or it is, you know, it's a threat. And we need to make sure that everyone understands that. In fact, just this morning at my office, there was a mother who was saying, what do I do? My daughter doesn't want to go to school anymore because of this bully on the bus. Right. And I said, well, you know, describe it a little bit more. And the child had actually threatened her, right? He had said, you know, he'd made fun of her hair and whatever. And then he also actually said, if you tell anyone, I will punch you in the face. Right. And these are elementary age children. And so I think he's absolutely right. We need to keep talking about it. The word bullying, I think, carries a lot of weight now, I think more perhaps than it has in the past. And I think that's positive when we're doing one of these campaigns to raise awareness, because it's still going on and there's still more work to be done. And we know that that it's not stopping at 3 o'clock or at whatever time you get out of school like it used to.
So you think bullying is maybe too big of a blanket to put over things like intimidation, assault, harassment?
I think it all is components of it, right? And we need to understand all of them and what it leads up to. And I know that in the last segment, it was great. They were talking about they can't just leave it, right? It stays with those children. And so then it's up to us as caring adults to step in and say, whether we're a youth worker or an educator or a parent or a family member, what are we going to do if our child is being bullied, as well as what are we going to do if our child is, in fact, the bully?
Well, I wonder then what your staff told that parent who called. You may not be privy to that, but maybe you were.
I actually was. It was interesting because they knew I was going to be here this afternoon. And so we jumped on. And, you know, one of the things that her initial response was, the daughter doesn't want to go on the bus anymore. And we talked about what actions had been taken. And she had talked to the teacher and the principal, and they were intervening. One of the things that we did want to make sure is that that little girl who was being bullied knows that she has a right to be on that bus. Right. And we need to encourage her. She did the right thing by telling an adult. She has done everything right. And we need to keep, and it took a lot of courage and strength for her to do that. So we need to keep encouraging that, right? And we also need to make sure, again, as adults, we said, do you need us to help follow up with the school? Do you need, how can we help reinforce this message that the parent had taken and the concern that she had?
Dr. Nellis, you're the dean of the School of Education at IU Kokomo, but you have a professional background as a school psychologist, which my schools didn't have, or if they did, I wasn't aware of it. Is that a position that's more common now?
Yeah, it's a great question, Matt. We get asked that question a lot. And the reality is your school probably did have a school psychologist who was working in and around the students and the teachers and administrators in your school building. Much like other professionals, though, who work in the schools around these kinds of topics, not all students know of them and know what they can do and how they can be a resource to them. So all schools have access to a school psychologist, much like they do to a school counselor, school social worker in some districts.
Is having a school psychologist now more common in part due to the prevalence of bullying?
I think bullying is one example. I think the kind of broad umbrella of an increased focus on the importance of mental health and mental wellness and how that impacts both academically and just kids' ability to interact and form relationships with both their peers and adults. So I think that increase has appeared largely because of a focus on mental health, social emotional learning, and wellness.
To kind of broaden this, you mentioned the schools having school psychologists due to the importance of mental health, which is very much in the news as we talk about school safety and things like that. What about support for a program, a school psychology program? Are we seeing that come down from the state or local level?
So if you're referring to a school psychology program or services within schools, I think we're seeing that broadly defined as a focus on social emotional learning competencies in schools. And the Indiana Department of Education relatively recently released competencies in those particular domains, social emotional learning domains, where they are providing educators a lot of resources, a lot of materials and ideas as how to integrate that into their classroom instruction. And then a lot of resources that are available to schools to use school-wide as part of both bullying prevention programs, but just overall mental health and social-emotional learning skills.
What necessitates a visit to a school psychologist? Do you have some examples?
Yeah, I think it's going to vary quite a bit based on what building you work in, what district you work in, and where you are across the state. So oftentimes school psychologists may work with students individually and or in small groups around academic or behavior or emotional kinds of concerns. And the impetus, if you will, can come from teachers, administrators, other people working in the building, as well as parents or students themselves.
So small groups and dealing with specific concerns, what would be a good example of a small group that you might have? Who would be in it and what concern would be being addressed?
Yeah, so it could be a small group focused on developing, for example, friendship skills. Right. You know, how to express to a classmate when you feel hurt or threatened or intimidated, or when you feel like they're simply not treating you like you deserve to be treated. So what are some ways both to recognize those feelings in yourself and how can you communicate that to others? I think oftentimes, well, quite frankly, adults and children aren't sure how to communicate their feelings in a productive way to help kind of open the lines of communication and maybe clear up any misunderstandings or hurt feelings that may be happening. And then if that's not cleared up and if that's not addressed, then sometimes there is other action or behavior that occurs.
Let's come back to bullying specifically. When it comes to bullying, is it important not to just focus on victims and perpetrators?
Absolutely. I think one of the kind of important kind of components of that interaction, if you will, are what sometimes in the literature is referred to as bystanders. Bystanders, so folks who are in the physical area and maybe seeing and or hearing something that's going on that they're not okay with. And that's the other kind of component, if you will, of social emotional learning, is that we can help kids learn and really help adults learning as well, how to be active in those kinds of situations, how to step in, maybe how to come to the aid of a student or someone who is on the receiving end of a threat or some type of intimidation.
Brandi Christensen, you presented on bullying for another one of our guests, Tammy Silverman, here from the Indiana Youth Institute. Can you give us a summary of that presentation you did for IYI?
Oh, a summary for an hour-long presentation. Yes, what we did was we initially just identified what the Indiana Department of Education decided what the definition was going to be for bullying. Which I'm sure you've already gone over, but
well, actually, we haven't. I'd be curious to hear what that definition came to be.
Okay. So, and this was in the Bill 1423. Bullying means overt, intentional, unwanted, repeated acts or gestures, including verbal or written communication, any images transmitted in any manner, including digitally or electronically, those traditional physical acts committed, aggression or any other behaviors that are committed by a student or a group of students against another student with the intent to harass, ridicule, humiliate, intimidate, or harm the targeted student and create for the targeted student an objectively hostile school environment.
That is very comprehensive and respectively so.
Yes, and then they go on to define what an objectively hostile learning environment is, and that basically places the targeted student in reasonable fear or harm to the targeted student's person or property, has a substantially detrimental effect on the targeted student's physical or mental health, has the effect of substantially interfering with the targeted student's academic performance, or the effect of substantially interfering with the targeted student's ability to participate in or benefit from the services, activities, and privileges provided by the school.
Tammy Silverman, you know, whether the word is cute or not, it sounds like the state and the schools are taking this very seriously.
Very seriously. And I think what you heard was just the definition of this morning's example, right? The one child didn't want to go to school because of this repeated overt action. Textbook definition of bullying, right? And the social and emotional competencies. I was just looking here on my phone. I wasn't checking my emails. I promise. Anyone can actually.
It's radio. No one can see you.
Yeah. Anyone can go to the Department of Education's website and pull up the social and emotional competencies. Hmm. And I would encourage folks to do that because, again, it's 87 pages. So fair warning. There's a lot of detail there. But it does talk about how we can teach kids maybe who are in distress and who are lashing out at other kids. If we're teaching those social and emotional competencies, they can learn self-regulation and how to deal with those stresses themselves instead of then creating this hostile environment for another child, right? And I think going back to some of the comments earlier about kind of that attachment theory is underlying a lot of these. If kids are attached to one another, if they're attached to caring adults, it will reduce the likelihood of bullying.
Brandy, back to you. You're an expert on mental health. What can cause a child to be the bully?
I'm sorry, Matt. I couldn't hear the question. What can cause a child to?
What can cause a child to be the bully in a situation?
So some risk factors for some bullying behavior. Bullying is linked to depression, so mental health does play a part for the risk factors for both the victims and the children that are involved in the behavior. They're most likely to have social influence, and they're more concerned about their popularity. There's a link to low self-esteem. Obviously, it can be observed behavior. They can often be easily pressured by others and less able to identify with the feelings of others, and that's where that socio-emotional competency comes in, as the doctor was saying. They may view violence in a positive way, and they may just be have difficulty following the rules and just be a more aggressive child to begin with. So,
let's bring the parents into this. Being a bully isn't exactly something that most children will admit to themselves, much less their parents. How can a parent recognize that their child might be a bully?
Are you asking me, Matt?
Yeah.
Well, some signs, symptoms would just be that escalating aggressiveness, reports from school, maybe having access to money or belongings that you know, they didn't get from home. They didn't. Maybe you don't know where they got it from. You can generally tell as they get a little bit older, there's more of a link to tobacco use. And when we get to the 11 to 14 year age, actually some more use of cannabis and alcohol. And, you know, basically you can also look at the friendships that they're bringing home, declining grades, things like that.
Tammy Silverman, do you have data points as to how Indiana ranks statistically when it comes to bullying?
We do. We do a little bit. And the data that we're looking at breaks it down by cyberbullying versus physical bullying and specifically on school property. And so we saw some big improvements on the physical bullying on school property. And I think that demonstrates the fact that schools are taking it very seriously. Right. And as I think earlier in the segment, they were talking about, there are posters places, there are trainings that happen. Schools have been pretty proactive. So we saw improvements in that area, and we're close to the national rate. Indiana's on target, right? And those numbers are declining. However, cyberbullying is a challenge, and you can see why. Again, that's something that you can't just often visibly see one-on-one in a classroom. It's not something that you could witness in a classroom. And so we're slightly higher than the national average, and there's a little bit of differences. So 1 in 6 kids report being cyberbullied. And again, this is, they break it down, girls is 1 in 5 and boys is 1 in 9. And so the girls is a little bit lower than the national rate, but much higher than boys. And the boys in Indiana are higher than the national rate, but still lower than girls. So some gender differences in there as well. And that's a big overbroad. If you want to break it down by ages and things, you can go to our website. But that's just general statistics that we have.
I'm very curious as to how that data is gathered. Kids are never going to admit that they are the bully, and very few kids who are being bullied want to talk about it.
Well, I think that second point, we're seeing more of that because we're taking away that stigma of saying that you were bullied, right? And hopefully by having the school psychologist, having the teachers trained on the competencies, we're able to effectively communicate that it's not your fault if this behavior is happening to you. So you're right. Those numbers are probably underreported, and we can anticipate that. At the same time, I think we've done a much better job as youth-serving professionals and educators of welcoming that information and making sure kids know it's not their fault. I can tell you, just as a mom herself of kids, they talk about bullying all the time. Now, occasionally, they do it in ways, if a sister, bumps the chair, stop it, you're bullying me. And we're like, no, that's not bullying. Cut it out, right? But you can tell that they're having regular conversations about it at school, which is where it's really important.
October is National Bullying Prevention Month. We are joined by Tammy Silverman in studio. She's the president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute. Dr. Leah Nellis is the dean of the School of Education at IU Kokomo. She's on Skype. And Brandi Christensen's on the phone with us. She's the president and CEO of Mental Health America Wabash Valley. We'll continue the conversation after a break. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. October is National Bullying Prevention Month, and we are here with Dr. Leah Nellis. She is the dean of the School of Education at IU Kokomo. We're also joined on the phone by President and CEO of Mental Health America Wabash Valley, Brandi Christensen. In the studio with us is President and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, Tammy Silverman. Dr. Nellis, a lot of focus is on social emotional learning. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. So social emotional learning refers to really kind of a collection of skills and competencies that children and adults use daily in any interaction that they engage in with others, certainly, but also in understanding themselves. So social emotional learning is really kind of encapsulates five different categories. Or domains, if you will. The first one is self-awareness, and that really is just having a sense of your own feelings, your interests, your values. And it's kind of associated with what most people think of when they think of self-confidence in many ways. The second category is self-management, and that refers to something actually that Tammy mentioned earlier, and it refers to our ability to be able to regulate our own emotions when we're stressed, when we're upset, when we're frustrated, and to be able to express emotions constructively, especially when interacting with others. Another category is social awareness, and that's really important to this topic of bullying because it focuses on being able to take the perspective of someone else and being able to empathize and appreciate and recognize differences. And then the fourth category is all focused on relationship skills, which is pretty self-explanatory. But the one thing that I think is particularly important for the topic of today is that this category includes being able to resolve interpersonal conflict and being able to seek help when you need it. And the example I think that Tammy started with this morning about the little girl on the bus is a good example of someone who was aware of her own feelings and knew when she needed to reach out and pull in others to help her with a difficult situation. And then the fifth and final category of social emotional learning skills is responsible decision making. And that really is about being able to make decisions that take into consideration yours and other people's safety and their well-being, and being able to problem solve social situations that may be challenging.
Dr. Nelson, I want to stay with you and ask about something that Shane Koizan said in the first segment. We heard him talking about kids jumping on the bandwagon, ganging up on a particular victim. Is that pretty common?
Yeah, I think it's certainly common. And, you know, there are multiple theories around kind of why bullying occurs and why folks tend to do that when they are, quote, kind of in that bystander role. One of the things that that does appear from some of the literature and some of the work being done on social emotional learning skills is that if we can teach and if we can model and practice what you do in those types of situations, it may decrease the likelihood of somebody, quote, jumping on the bandwagon, right? Because sometimes we do that, kids do that when they don't know what else to do, and they feel the social pressure to do that as well, when otherwise they may not, and they may know it's not really right, but they don't know what to do in that particular situation.
Well, but kids also just kind of want to belong, right? They take every
Sure.
opportunity to fit in, and so unfortunately, that sometimes includes doing so at others' expense. But is it particularly damaging to a child then when they're ganged up on versus when one person attacks them?
Oh, absolutely. I think that has an impact when there's multiple aggressors, if you will, who are involved in a particular situation. And I think it goes back to, you know, one thing that Shane mentioned about really kind of looking out for kids who appear to be isolated, who may not have others who are going to step in and come to their defense. That certainly has more of, or at least a different type of impact on a child. Yes.
Brandi Christensen, I want to come back to another thing that Shane Coizen said in the first segment about throwing his bully a curveball. When the bully asked him, as he had been asked many times, and he expressed it well, when I heard it, it reminded me of bullies that I dealt with in school. He said, "Do you want to die?" And in the incident he was referring to, he responded, "Sometimes," which I thought was kind of a poignant response. And as he said about the bully, it stopped him in his tracks. Obviously, there are healthier, more direct, more effective and official ways to deal with bullying. But what about that? What about just talking back in a non-threatening way that might make the other person think?
Well, I think it's huge. And as you said, it's non-threatening, but it's also fearless. At that point, Shane had, you know, had no, at least fear, affective fear when he responded to him. And he responded honestly. And it clearly affected the bullying behavior at that time. Yeah, we see that a lot of times, you know, hurt people hurt people. So when you can, you know, have that one-on-one situation and have an authentic moment and respond without fear, and, you know, as Shane did, you can throw a curveball. And there are many ways that we can practice, as the doctor was saying, the resiliency, role playing, the preventative, you know, measures that we can take, the peer bystander training. I mean, we know that kids have a unique ability to prevent bullying. Peer intervention can stop more than half of bullying situations in their tracks. So the problem is that less than 20% of the time are they actually intervening. And it really is just that empathy training and then the ability to do that role playing. And the earlier we start with that, I think we'll have the best results. So, but I was really affected too when Shane made that comment, because many times, you know, the bully's just operating in a role that he or she is familiar with too. And you can give a person pause in the middle of that. And when he talked about finding his truth and the voice within, it really can alter a situation, even a life. So I was really glad to hear that.
Hurt people hurt people. That sounds like a buzz phrase. Is that something that's used when talking to kids about bullying and kind of explaining what's happening?
I use that phrase when talking to kids, adults, co-workers. I mean, let's face it, bullying doesn't stop when you get out of school. And whether you want to call it bullying or whether, you know, it's really, we're operating from a base place. We're operating from our biology rather than from our ability to be rational and empathetic human beings. So when we remind people that hurt people, whether we're in a domestic violence shelter, having a support group, whether we're talking to a second grade class in our, you know, anti-bullying, social emotional learning program, it doesn't matter, or whether we're talking about a conflict resolution in the office. If we can remember that hurt people, it can create a space for empathy for everyone that's involved, and then that gives us an opportunity to make it a teaching moment. So,
Tammy Silverman, let's talk about some of the adult thinking when it comes to bullying, some of the dismissive attitudes among people who don't think it's a big deal. What are some examples of that, and how is that problematic?
Well, first and foremost, I just wanted to, if it's okay, really echo what Brandy was just saying on the, because we, I think all of us that have worked a lot have said hurt people. And we know that it's encouraging us, particularly in our line of work and working with kids, to try to figure out what is that root cause that is causing, what is the underlying issue that the child who is the perpetrator is going through. At the same time, I think it's important that we say consistently and loud and clear, as my colleagues do here, that does not excuse the behavior. Right. And so because sometimes I think we talk about that enough that the parents of the child who's being bullied say, yeah, but my child is still suffering. Right. And that's true. So it's both and, not either or. So it's really important that we focus on that, that we do need to look at the underlying issue for that child that is having the aggressive behavior and is the perpetrator. But at the same time, we need to protect the other children that are there and make sure we're stepping up, whether that's as a caring adult or training bystander intervention. But, you know, we still hear some of those things. I was as Leah was talking about, you know, making some notes here, because we still do occasionally say, oh, he just likes you. That's how he shows affection, right? He's chasing you around and he's poking, you know, those kind of old, they didn't really mean it, you know, just walk away from him. Those kinds of things that I think hopefully we're moving away from. And at the same time, in some of the research we were doing that talked about how parents should respond to either their child being bullied or being the bully, it's to stay calm and keep the child talking, right? I think when you hear some of these aggressions, like Shane was talking about, that are so extreme, as a parent, your gut instincts kind of kick in, and or as a caring adult, if whether you're a coach, youth group leader, whatever those things are, and you say, gosh, this is terrible. And you start to come out of a place of your feelings about it, right? Rather than saying, okay, tell me some more about this, and keep that child talking, making sure that we're supporting that child. And the same when your child's the bully, right? Mm-hmm. Don't dismiss it. Don't say, come on, get your act together. You know, you need a better group of friends. But really talk about what's going on and how can we help move through that? I think that it sounds really simplistic, right? It sounds kind of goofy even. But at the core of it, we as adults intervening need to stay calm in both scenarios and make sure we're listening so that we can help productively move forward.
I would also imagine that there's an instinct as a parent to solve the problem even before you have the full picture.
You
so
bet.
This idea that you brought up of letting or making the kids talk more, continue talking about it before you say anything.
You bet. And affirming, you know, thanking them for trusting you, thanking them for coming forward, telling them you're doing the right thing. You know, you've done the right thing by stepping up. You know, I know this takes a lot of courage. Thank you for being so courageous. All of those kinds of things keeps them moving forward and is encouraging rather than shutting them down. And you also need to collect the evidence. I mean, the reality is, if your child's telling you about incidents or a child is telling, jot down, well, what day did that happen? Where did that happen? Were there other kids around? Right. And make sure that they know you're actively listening and that you're also making sure that you're writing this down. So if you do need to go to the school counselor or the principal, you have some hard facts in front of you as well.
Brandy Christensen, I want to kind of stick with this the adult involvement and come to some common criticism toward the attention that bullying's gotten over the years. And that is that bullying can build character. You know, we've heard this. It can give kids thicker skins, which they'll need later in life. What's your response to that?
I mean, obviously, we are going to continue to experience work situations in our social circles, in our places of worship. I mean, there's always going to be these types of obstacles to overcome. Resilience is an important piece, but I don't think that we should dismiss or, you know, justify the types of behaviors that make people feel unsafe and and make it incumbent upon the person experiencing those feelings to do something about it. Obviously, you know, those five domains of social-emotional competencies are just as important for adults. And the earlier we began building on them, you know, the more, the stronger we're going to be with them. But, you know, our feelings are valid. We should all be able to feel safe. And I think that, especially in a workplace, not if you just want to think of it in terms of liability, you know, these types of bullying behaviors that later on become sexual harassment, or there's a litany of different ways that that manifests, you know, they can become a liability for a company, and the payouts can be huge. And sometimes, you know, financial repercussions are the only way that you can have a communication with people who are embedded in the infrastructure hierarchy of these types of corporations. So I think it's really important all the way around. I think everybody has a right to feel safe and free from discrimination or, you know, any types of bullying behavior, however that looks. But I think, you know, there is support out there for people who are going through it. And, you know, I have to put a plug out for Mental Health America. We have a ton of resources. You know, we're an affiliate with a national organization. We have a ton of resources for parents, adults, children, anybody who's going through bullying, any types of mental health issues, you know, suicide thinkings, mental health screening tools. And you know, we just want as many people to know about it as possible. And, you know, they can go to our website, which is mentalhealthamerica.net, to have access to those resources. No, it's not going to go away as adults. No, that doesn't make it okay. And we are, to some extent, we're better off the more resilient we are. I guess that's the long, winding answer that I have for you, unfortunately.
That's quite all right. Dr. Nellis, I want to come back to you. Can adults go too far in shielding kids from these kinds of negative social interactions like bullying? Where do they step in?
Well, that's a tough question, Matt. So I suppose hypothetically there would be a situation where you could say an adult went too far to shield or protect, but it's hard for me to imagine one. And I think, you know, Brandy's point there was a good one, that yes, we need resilience and we need to be able to be resilient and be able to tap into our resources, if you will. But I don't know that it requires bullying and extreme situations to allow us to develop the skill to do that. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but I'll stop right there.
It's quite all right. I want Tammy to follow up. We have less than 30 seconds to go. I'm so sorry, but I want to ask you as well, should adults choose their involvement in these matters carefully to avoid affecting their children's social lives in a negative way?
Well, they need to be thoughtful, but I think what both of my colleagues have said is absolutely true, that we need to make sure every child is safe, and in addition that they feel safe. And that feel safe is kind of that gray area, right? Where we as adults need to step in and make sure, because if they don't feel safe, they're not going to learn as well. They're not going to make those connections, and they're not going to succeed to the level that they can and that we would like to see them succeed.
I want to thank our live panel today via Skype, Dr. Leah Nellis, Dean of the School of Education at IU Kokomo. Thank you for your time, Dr. Nellis.
Thank you, Matt.
On the phone with us today, President and CEO of Mental Health America Wabash Valley, Brandy Christensen. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt.
And in the studio, President and CEO of Indiana Youth Institute, Tammy Silverman. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for caring about our kids.
Tomorrow is the Friday pitch-in. We'll get caught up on the biggest Indiana stories of the week with Indiana Public Broadcasting digital editor Lauren Chapman. We'll also hear from reporter Justin Hicks on a new apprenticeship program in Elkhart County that gives students specialized training and workforce opportunities. Join us tomorrow at this time for that conversation. I'm Matt Pelzer. Thank you for listening. This is All In.